invitation to come here again. It's always a pleasure and have a lot of fun. So today I will talk about engaged revenue, individuality, and metastable supersymmetry breaking. It's a work that I did in collaboration with Ricardo Arcurio from Brussels, Matteo Bertolini from CISA in Italy, and Jean-Luc Cacciu from Stanford. We had a couple of papers, and recently we put out some review, short review of the work. So I heard that Jean-Luc was here last week, so probably you have heard a lot about supersymmetry breaking in quiver gauge theories. So that's a good starting point for me. So the outline of my talk will be the following. And it's a good starting point for me, but I want to address other questions today. And basically, these are the questions that made us study these simple geometries that in the end had all these interesting applications that we are seeing recently. So first of all, I will give a general discussion of what metastable supersymmetry breaking both in string theory and in gauge theory, because these are the two things that I want to connect in this talk. I will spend some time talking about metastable supersymmetry breaking in supersymmetric QCD with some light frameworks. This is the ISS model. Then I will describe the model I want to talk about. I will explain how all the terms are generated dynamically in my model. I will explain how all these quantities that are generated dynamically are stabilized. And at the end, I will propose a gravity dual of my gauge theory, realizing this metastable supersymmetry breaking. So let me start by saying that dynamical supersymmetry breaking may be relevant for nature at the electronic scale. Basically, most of us believe that there's a high chance that supersymmetry is important for explaining why the hierarchy between the weak and the Planck scale is radiatively stable. But explaining that hierarchy is also an important point, why it's 10 to the minus 16. And one interesting idea is that supersymmetry is broken dynamically, then in these cases, you expect that the F term is not of the order of the high, it's not given by the high scale of your theory, but it's suppressed by things of e to the minus of the order of e to the minus 1 over g squared of some gauge coupling. Okay? So, metastable supersymmetry breaking is a quite generic phenomenon, both in field theory, as I will explain, it's very generic. You know, most of some of the simplest gauge theories that you can think of, and it's crucial in some string theory constructions. The most relevant example is KKLT. So dynamical supersymmetry breaking is often a strong coupling phenomenon. So in the last, let's say, 10 years, we have two very strong, very efficient tools to deal with this this type of strong coupling. One of them is cyberduality. This is a gauge theory tool, if you want. And on the other hand, we have gauge gravity duality. And interestingly, the two things that I said at the beginning are two manifestations of metastable supersymmetry breaking in these two contexts. So let me say a few words about that, what I have in mind. What I have in mind about metastable supersymmetry breaking in gauge gravity duality, well, it's basically based on this work of Cacciu, Pearson, and Berlin, which I would refer to as KPB and generalizations. And what they did is they considered the gravity dual of a cascading gauge theory, the gauge theory for the conifold, which is a gauge theory with two gauge groups, SUN plus M and SUN, also known as Clevanus-Strassler. This is a warped throat that is capped at the infrared bottom by a free sphere of finite size. And what they did is they took this gravity solution and they added a small number of anti-breaks. Small compared to the parameter that is breaking conformal invariance here. Okay, these anti-distributions are attracted to the tip of this geometry, and there they don't have anything to annihilate against. And what they checked, and let me be more explicit, what happens with this, and what they check is that this situation, if P is much, the number of anti-distributions is much smaller than M, where much smaller means up to the order of 8%, there's no classical instability. And this system breaks supersymmetry at its unstable.
What happens if this thing becomes larger is that this entity differential can be thought as sitting at one of the poles of the three sphere that is at the bottom of Lyapunov-Strassler, one to polarize in and become an NS5 ring, wrapping some two sphere at the at some around the three sphere. They unwrap, they go to the north pole of the three sphere, and they you have a brain flux annihilation. They annihilate against some of the NS flux on the dual B cycle, and you are left with a situation without anti brain.
Fractional brains?
No, anti brain. Very large anti brain. They are not wrapping anything, they're wrapping when they are polarized. So, how do you have to think about these things? Well, you look at the charges, and this the way to think about this as some non-supersymmetric metastable state in a theory which has some number of colors which is reduced by p. Although, and this is basically the motivation of all this work, the gauge theory explanation of this phenomenon of this of the understanding gauge theory understanding of this metastable vacuum was lacking, and that's what we want to get.
Shadow within the field theory, from the field theory.
Exactly, that's what I said. That's not. Okay, so that's what we want to do something that goes beyond this. We want to consider something that is similar to KPG, but that you are going to be able to find this explanation. And these states are very important in different models. For example, KKLT, the anti-D brain, is what you use to raise the ABS vacuum to the system, the metastable vacuum, and in models of inflation. Brain inflation, these anti-D brains that are sitting at the bottom is what attracts some extra D3 brains, and the distance between the two is what plays the role of the infant. So these are interesting objects. So let me move to the second set of ideas, how metastable states appear in some gauge theories using cyber-duality. This is basically work based on the work of Intrigator, Sider, and Shi. What they show is that there was a lot of work following that, is that the metastable supersymmetric breaking is common in field theories as simple as supersymmetric QCD with light flares. But the supersymmetric breaking vacuum is sitting at strong coupling and very small depth. So it's a very complicated example. You cannot analyze that unless you use cyber-duality, and cyber-duality maps you to an infrared free description where you can do this explicitly. So there are some qualitative similarities between the two things that I have discussed, between KPB, meaning gravity, and ISS states. First of all, they are related to baryonic branch in some cases, like in F equals FC. They are, in these two cases, these are non-chiral gauge theories. First was the coniform, then the other one is super QCD. They have a modular space of Boltzmann modes that in the gravity is parameterized by positions of brain, and so on. Okay? And furthermore, which is related to his question, is that it's natural to expect that supersymmetry breaking at the end of the flow is ABS to CFT or gauge gravity duality dual to some dynamical supersymmetry breaking in the field. Of course, this doesn't have to be the case because I'm talking about supersymmetric things. So it's not guaranteed that things that live at strong tough coupling are going to survive at weak tough coupling. I think that are there at weak tough coupling are going to survive in the gravity regime. But we want to explore that question. So this is the question I want to address today. Is there some relation between these two classes of metastable states? So in this talk, we will argue that at least in some cases the answer is yes. As I said, this is the focus of my talk. This is not, although at the end of the day we will get a model that is some deep brain realization of ISS with parameters nicely generated dynamically. This is not the goal of our talk. Our talk is really more ambitious and really was to connect these two things.
So, I mean, there was a famous example by Maldacena and Nastasia, I don't know if you're familiar with it. when they tried to argue something like this, so they were studying the gravity field of three-dimensional N=1 DHT with the Chen Simons interaction. And then there was a similar physics. There, the supersymmetry is supposed to be spontaneously broken if the level is below the dual Coxeter number, something like that. And well, what they argue is exactly in the gravity dual, they have the supersymmetric solution. And then somehow breaking supersymmetry from the field theory was precisely adding sort of a prograde in the dual geometry.
So is this the idea is similar, but I really want to focus on this type of things that I was saying today, like KPB, meaning the anti-delivery in a warp throat, and ISS, because these two things really seem similar in Maldacena and Anastase, it's sort of related to ISS. Right? So, and these are the two things that I want to connect today. But yeah, I'm aware of that. So, let me give you a fast review of ISS, which is a Maldacena state in the SUMC gauge theory with massive flavors. So what are the requirements? Well, you want to have supersymmetry breaking, okay? You want it to be not in an absolute minimum, but it's in a metastable minimum, local minimum. It's parametrically long-lived, and that's also a computational requirement that I told you, is that you want to be able to say something, and that is achieved by putting things considering theories that are in the free magnetic range. Mean that they have a dual description that captures the infrared physics, which is a free theory. So supersymmetry breaking means that if this is parametrized in some direction in field space, that the potential at some point is minimum is greater than zero. This is achieved by a so-called run condition mechanism that I will explain in the next slide. You want it to be really metastable, meaning that there are no flat directions or unstable directions. And in particular, there are some directions that are worrisome. There's some directions that are flat at three levels, but they are not constant bosons of any broken symmetry, so there's no reason for them to remain flat, especially once after you break supersymmetry. These are called pseudomoduli, and in this example, these pseudomoduli are lifted at one loop, so there's no unstable direction or even flat direction. And how do you guarantee that this is a long lived? Well, this is achieved by a long distance between the supersymmetric minimum and the non-supersymmetric one, and the size of the barrier. This gives you a bounce action that is high, it's parametrically high. I will explain what the parameter that you are controlling is. And this ensures a long life. So, okay, this is a theory that we want to consider, super-young means with massive flavor of Q and Q tilde. So the superpotential is a master of that form. I'm considering the simplest example in which all the masses are the same, and I'm suppressing flavor indices here. Okay, well, it's understood. And the mass is much lighter than the strong coupling scale of the gauge theory. Otherwise, you can integrate them out. You are left with a theory that doesn't have any flavor, and that's a very simple problem. And as I said, in order to have control of the infrared theory, we want it to be in the free magnetic range. The free magnetic range is some restriction of the number of flavors and colors of that form. First of all, you want the number of flavors to be greater than the number of colors. This allows you to have a cyber duality. And the other inequality on the right tells you that the beta function of the magnetic dual is such that the theory is free in infrared. So since we have a dual infrared free description, why don't we use it? So you switch to that description, which is against some super QCD-like theory. It has some SUM gauge group where the N is basically the number of flavors minus the number of colors. Again, it has the same number of flavors, but these are the dual quarks, Q and Q tilde. And in addition, these theories have singlets, which are usually called cyber mesons, which are can be thought as composites of the electric theory, QQ tilde in the electric theory. And the superpotential is anytime you do cyber duality, you add a
qubit coupling between quarks and mesons, on these new mesons. And this is rewriting the original superpotential, which was quadratic in the original quarks, in the new variables. Hmm? There's a linear term in the meson that appears there. And this theory breaks the supersymmetry in a very simple way at three levels. If you look at the F term for the meson phi, it's of this form. This is a QQ tilde matrix, Q tilde Q matrix. And here you have a delta ij, which is the rank is basically is just the number of flavors. But on this side, the rank is the dual number of colors, which is.
Yes, I'm rescaling things. I won't use it in anything very simple. I will take care of anything that I do of what H is. But here, yes, I rescale mesons by some matching scale and so on. And I take care of what that matching scale can be. Mm-hmm. When I say H is small or H is large, I'm taking care of what H, of what that scale that is surface things is. Yes. So these two matrices are of different rank. So the kind of this F term, all these F terms kind of be saturated, and supersymmetry is broken. And this is what is called the rank condition. So let me say one more slide explaining this. As I said, there is a classical model space. Of pseudo modular space of Susi breaking vacuum that saturated all the F terms except that one and minimized that F term. It is of this form. You have some freedom, some entries in the meson, and some entries in the quarks that are not constrained. And these are the so called pseudo moduli. And these things are listed at one loop by the Coleman Weinberg potential. What you do is supersymmetry is broken, you compute. The Kuhlmann-Weinberg potential that in this now is some super trace. There's some contribution coming from bosons and fermions. The mass matrix for bosons and for fermions are functions of the pseudo moduli, and they are not equal, so you get non-zero contribution. And this at the end gives you an effective potential for the pseudo moduli that gives you positive masses around all these things, around the vacuum, which is sitting at the point of maximal unbroken symmetry in this case. And this will change in the model that I would expect.
And in addition, of course, the theory has some NF minus NC, which is the dual number of colors supersymmetric minima. And they are staying at the mesons having these values. Remember, mu is the dual mass term, lambda is the dual dynamical scale. And epsilon is the dimension of the parameter that I had in mind, which is the ratio of the mass over the lambda. And this is something that I want to make small. And it's the dynamical scale times epsilon to some positive power, meaning that it's below the energy. It can be this supersymmetric minimum sits well below the energy at which the infrared theory becomes strongly coupled. And it sits at the negative power of epsilon times mu. So it's much above mu. Okay. So this distance in field space and the height of the barrier is what guarantees that you can make this metastable vacuum parametrically non-live tuning this parameter epsilon. So let me know. Now I will switch and I will explain a model that is similar to ISS. And why I want to consider this model is because I want to consider engineer a model that is similar to ISS, but with all ingredients that you would see in KPB, or that you know how to generalize KPB. That's what the guiding principle is to propose this quiver. So the gauge theory that we engineer is we engineer it with D3 brains and fractional brains. On a CN orbifold of a conifold, meaning we take some singular Kravyov cone, which has some orbifold of the conifold singularity, and we probe it with some D3 brains and some fractional brains that are D5s wrapped on some two cycles. this is the Gauge theory for the conifold. Looks like that. It has a quiver. Is well, you heard a lot about quivers last week, so I'm sure you understand. There are two gauge groups that have two ranks, R1 and R2. There are four chiral multiplets transforming in by fundamental representations. Two transforming in a fundamental of one and anti-fundamental of two, and two others in the other direction. And there's a superpotential, which is a gauge invariant combination of this form that preserves SU2 cross SU2 global symmetry. So what we do now is we orbifold this gauge theory by Cn. Here I'm showing the simplest example. The simple example that will be sufficient for me, which is C6 C3 orbifold. Instead of having two gauge groups, you now have six gauge groups, which is you multiply by three, and you get all these chiral multiples that follow from the original ones. An important point of this theory, that's why basically one of the reasons why we took it, among others, is that this orbifold is non-chiral. It's completely non-chiral. You have, for every anti-fundamental representation, you have a fundamental one. So ranks of the gauge groups, which are here the N1 to N6, are not constrained by anomaly cancellation. Okay, so they can be chosen arbitrarily. And if you saw this, what happens here is that all these things are the geometric or gravity or string theory origin, is that these anomaly-free rank assignments are in one-to-one corresponding with regular and fractional arrays that you can consider in this job. So I'm building this field theory that I want to consider, and then I will move to gravity. So out of this six-node quiver, the ones I had here, oh, and this quiver has superpotential that flows from here, which couple all four by fundamentals that end in each node. This is the superpotential. So these are the type of ranks that we want to consider. We want to consider three ranks of out of the six gauge groups. We want to consider three of them to have NC. And I want to be one, and the other two to be zero, for reasons that will become clear later. So this is the quiver that we want to consider. Before I say something, let me just hockey stick. So this gauge group here, the third one, is the one that will play the role similar to the ISS gauge group. All the other stuff here, like this extra brain and this couple of nodes here, are there just to generate masses of some flavors. From the point of view of this node, you have NC plus one flavors, and all that flavors will be masses. So little digression is that fractional brains can be classified according to the infrared dynamics of the gauge theories living on them. It's something I work on with Ami. And there's some classification that you can do. You have the usual deformation brains, which are the brains that you have in Klebanov-Strassler. You have N equals two brains, which are brains that happen when geometrically when you have singularities that are not isolated, for example, C2 mod Cn times C. There's some mesons in the gauge theory. From the point of view of the gauge theory, what happens here is you have some, if you consider the gauge theory just these brains, there are some mesons or some gauge invariant operators that are not in the superpotential, so they are flat directions, and this is typically, and this is what maps in geometry to the fact that you have this curve of singularity. These mesons are, or these operators are parameterizing your position in that curve of singularities. And there are the other ones, which is the rest of them, which is called dynamical supersymmetric breaking brains, which is when you have brains that will correspond in the infrared to deformations that you can, you really cannot do. What happened in these theories, typically, is that there's a supersymmetry is broken, you don't have a supersymmetric minimum. You don't have a, by orientation folding, you can get a non-supersymmetric minimum at finite distance, but typically they have parameters. Okay? I'm not choosing them yet. Yes, I will tune them at the end of the day. Well, this guy will be always at weak copy. This is just to provide the things that I need. So this guy will be strongly coupled, which generates some masses for stuff that is sitting here. These guys here, this is not the gauge group, it's just nothing. So this guy will get masses from some other mechanism. And that's, but the second node will always be a weak coupled. So I can take the rank assignments that I chose there, and I can classify them in terms of this classification. There are different ways of doing it, but well, all of them are equivalent. So the first two nodes, this vector NC, NC 0, 0, 0, from this point of view, and I will show you the geometry at the end, it's an N equals 2 fractional brain. And then you have deformation brains here, and you have an additional deformation brain. Since it's just one, doesn't play much of a role, but it's important. Okay, and this theory, if you want, can arise at the infrared bottom of a duality cascade. That's it. So the dynamics of this gauge theory in more detail. The superpotential is of this form. There are quartic couplings between these fields here and these fields here. This is what comes from orbifold in the conifold, and there's some extra mass term that I have added by hand, and I will explain how it arises. It arises from a stringy instanton, an Euclidean D-ray. And why I want to separate these two things, I will explain at the end of the day. From the point of view of node one, you have exactly NLC equals NF flavors. So there's a quantum modulized space for that gauge group, which is of this form. The original relation with the determinant of the mesons of this field, the mesons are formed by this by fundamentals contracted, minus the baryon was zero, now gets a correction proportional to the dynamical scale of that node. So you see where I'm going, because if you restrict, and I will explain how you can restrict to the mesonic branch, meaning where the baryons are zero, you get a non-zero determinant for the mesons. The mesons are these fields that appear here, x21, x12, together. So if I write the original superpotential in terms of these mesons, I get this cubic coupling that comes from the quartic coupling originally. And if I give a non-zero expectation value to the mesons, I get precisely a mass term for some flavors of this node.
Coupling, gauge coupling is strong?
Yes. I'm assuming, at the end of the day, I assume the right order of lambdas just for the purpose of the analysis and representing how the mass arises there. So, again, so look at what happens. From the point of view, this node, which I said is going to be the ISS like node, you have NF massive flavors coming from here. These are these two arrows here. You have an extra additional massive flavor here, which whose mass I chose to be much larger than the mass that is going to have are going to have these guys. And there's an additional quartic term here that in the presence of the other two terms creates a symmetry. You cannot have this having R charge equal to two, R charge equal to two, and this combination of the two other terms having R charge to 2. And this breaks asymmetry, and this is explicitly, and this is a nice thing, because it allows to have the non-zero gauge masses. And this model, similar model, was studied by Kitano, Guri, and Kuchi.
Is it a spontaneous breaking of asymmetry?
Depending on how you see it. If you think that the coupling is filled, it's a non-zero coupling, which is charged on the large symmetry. There's no massless mode associated to it, so it's not spontaneous, it's implicit. Okay, so you can analyze this model again. It's exactly the analysis of the analysis of ISS, it has some supersymmetry breaking vacuum, which is basically coming from the fact that you have these masses. And as in ISS, the vacuum energy comes from the NC smaller masses. And the NC smaller masses are all simulated by this thing. So again, how do I find that the same vacuum as in ISS, this is just more complicated, but it's the same thing. I found the magnetic dual that is in node 3, this was an theory with MC equals N plus 1, so it's the dual ratio is trivial. The superpotential is the original superpotential written in terms of mesons. These 5 are mesons. That comes from combining the original quarks of this ratio plus cubic terms. So these are everything that has a node 3 in between is contracted to give some new meson, a magnetic quarks. And the analysis is the same, the supersymmetry breaking by Rank condition. And furthermore, any pseudomodule that you have originally is stabilized by the one loop effective potential. Okay, but one interesting thing, which is the consequence of having this term here, you don't have anything like this term in ISS. This is the term that was breaking our symmetry. This makes that the as a consequence of this, and this was studied originally by Kitano, Omori, and Okuchi, is that the value at which 5, which is the original, the analog of 5-0 in ISS, is stabilized, is non-zero. And it's proportional basically to that coupling, H lambda 3 squared. You can compute it, it's some non-zero value. Here you don't see that it's non-zero, but it's a non-zero value. And this is important.
So this quiver is slightly different than the LIBA theories. It would be the typical dual of the model you started with. If you have extra hours, those which will be completed.
Well, this is the same.
Yeah. So if it was a conformal theory, you wouldn't have those hours from 2 to 4.
Well, the only thing that I didn't do is that I left the mass terms explicit, right? I didn't integrate them off.
So you say that this term. What you can do would be to integrate them out.
I don't integrate them out.
Okay.
So I finished with the 50 analysis. I explained that this has a, from a field theory point of view, has a metastable vacuum. But let me explain where these extra terms that I like to put by hand come from. At the end, I can explain why I want to put it by hand, but it will just complicate the story. So I said I put the master of this form. And the way it arises is by from D-brain instantons, which is some Euclidean D-brain, in this case an Euclidean one-brain, wrapping a two-cycle corresponding to a node that is not occupied by a gauge theory. No. If this D-brain wrap a node that is occupied, you get the usual ADS superpotentials or things like that. Gauge theory instant, or the effect in the correct case, you get the effect of a gauge theory instant. Okay? So this D-brain instanton can generate superpotentials or can modify the superpotentials on the quivers. And to do that, and I checked that Shamit discussed this at least in one full transparency last week. What you need, I will consider a clear D1 wrapping some of the extra node, the unoccupied. Remember, I had 6 original nodes, I only occupied 4, had the 5th one. So what happens is that you say, okay, in order to generate the superpotential, this thing has to have only 2 fermionic zero modes on the
on the sector that goes from the ED1 to itself. And enable it seems that this is the case because you say, okay, I mean, this half BPS object in something that has n equals one supersymmetry, which is the system of Calabi-Yau plus D-brains. And so you will be happy, but the thing is a little more subtle. When you compute the ED1 spectrum, the brain doesn't care about other brains that are there, so it really sees n equals two. So in principle, there are four zero modes that you can argue might be lifted by coupling to fluxes or other things, but the best, most safe thing to do is just to really kill them if you can, and in this case, you can kill them very easily, is by projecting them out by putting this node on top of an orient default plane. And it's very easy to do. This is another advantage of this geometry, and that's why you heard last week about all this engineering of these simple supersymmetry breaking models. You can, you know very easily how to put things on top of orient default planes. Okay, and there are extra strings or states in the Ramon sector stretching from the Euclidean D1 to the gauge theory brain, and everything can be encoded in some so-called extended quiver. This represents the instanton, and there are some fermionic zero modes transforming like that. These are also called the Ganor strings, and they couple in the way that chiral multiplet would couple. You have coupling that looks alpha x43 x34 beta. Here you don't have bosonic fermionic zero modes, bosonic zero modes. They would appear only if the brain, the Euclidean D brain, would be wrapping the same in the internal geometry, the same cycle that the gauge theory node is wrapping. That would be a gauge theory instanton, so you don't have them here. And I said you have this quartic coupling. Once you integrate over alpha and beta, you get precisely, in this case, this operator, which is quadratic, weighted by the exponential of minus the area wrapped by the instanton. Okay, so this is basically the mass term that I put over there. So a similar Euclidean D brain is on the other side of the quiver. Okay, you have similar couplings. Now they will generate the coupling which is of this form, since there was the color, number of colors in that node was NC. Now you will have a coupling between variants instead of having just coupling between bifundamentals. And then you have all these extra multi-instanton things that you can estimate or you can compute with geometric transitions. And they are, you can neglect them, this analysis, yeah, because they are suppressed by higher powers of the hierarchy scale. So now I can explain why I did what I did, why I took the constraint on node, quantum constraint on node one to generate masses, and I just crossed out the variance. And that gave me some back, that gave me some back energy. But you can say, why do you do that? Why don't you allow the variance to get there? Your meson will, you can pass the variance on this side, you can get a lower determinant for the meson, and this will be like lowering the masses of all these extra fields, and that will ruin all the analysis that I did. So that's a possibility, and that's why we did this. Okay, so simply if you consider the compute the off-diagonal terms that comes from minimizing this energy with respect to variant waves, you get a non-zero contribution. This on its own would mean that this thing is not stable, but the potential here just will tell you where it comes from, contains extra terms, and these extra terms come from two sides. One of them is that you have a lambda and C. Okay, this is an Lagrange multiplier that appears here. And the thing is that you can, once you compute the diagonal part, you get two contributions. This is B tilde, B tilde. You get one contribution coming from this term, this string instanton there. And you have another one that is proportional to the phi to 2, which is the field that I told you gets a there. It's a non-zero web in this system. So any of the two things can stabilize. This, in this case, this thing here is already sufficient. If you see the go through the parameters of how they are tuned, how can you tune them, how much room you have to tune these things, you already see that this VEV, non-zero VEV from 5 to 2 is already sufficient for stabilizing field. And in this case, this simplifies to this. And the baryonic directions are stable, provided the diagonal terms are greater or equal than the absolute value of the off diagonals. And this places a very simple and fulfillable constraint on the scales, which is that the scale of the first node over the scale of the third node, it's smaller than the scale of the third node, which is your ISS node, over the high energy scale. The high energy scale, I here put it as string scale star, meaning that it's this comes basically from one over this coupling that Andy was asking about, IH, which is here is like basically 1/m Planck or 1/m string. It's the natural size that it has. But you can look at it in many ways, but this can arise at the bottom of a cascade. You can match couplings at each scale. So basically the string scale can be warped down to anything you want, provided this is a higher energy than all the dynamical scale of the gauge theory. Okay, so this is a thing that is very easy to achieve. Okay, so far I explained, I did the field theory analysis, I explained how all the argument, all the terms in that I need arise, and I explained why they are stable. So that finishes the field theory part, or the string theory part, but let me now explain why we like this model, right? Why we look, instead of looking at KPV, which is the conifold, we look at a much more complicated quiver. And we didn't look at the gauge theory of ISS, we could look at something much more complicated. And that's why, because in this case, I think we understand the geometry in more detail, or why this thing likes to be stable. So the theory orbifold of the conifold that we are considering is described by this equation. XY equals UV is the original conifold equation. It doesn't matter for much of the things that I'm going to say, but this is a toric singularity. It has some description in terms of some polygon in C2. And the important thing is that it has some dual description, which you obtain after triangulating this thing and finding the dual graph. So next to the work of Ami, it's called a PQ web, and you can think about this as some picture of the geometry. What you have here is some two torus, a T2 over each point that degenerates, the circle degenerates over lines. So basically, over each segment, one of the two directions of the two torus shrinks, and both directions shrinks over vertices. And on top of that, you have an extra U1 direction coming from the Norman bundle. But this already tells you enough. Each finite segment here, as I told you, is it's a two-sphere, just because one of the two cycles in the two torus have shrink to zero, and the remaining one shrinks to zero at the vertices. So there are five two spheres. These five two spheres are in one-to-one correspondence with the five types of fractional brains that I said that you can add in this non-chiral quiver. And you can do better. You can understand what's the geometry. This looks really like three conifolds, like these things glued together at some A1 singularities. These are the n equals 2 singularities that I was talking about. This will play a role. And this equation admits three complex deformations, which is just take each xy and you modify by an epsilon, which have a very simple description in terms of these diagrams. It's like taking some sub-diagram and removing it. And this here is the S3 that grows after this complex deformation.
And in only quartic terms?
Yes.
So it corresponds to a different triangulation. It's only conifold like instead of C2s. cube. This is this one. This don't have a joint, but this model seems to have a joint.
Yes, these are joints that randomness appear depending on how you put.
So this is after duality. You mean.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So these are the adjoints. Everything that I said in the physics will map here. Mm-hmm. We have seen on trivial compact A cycles in the language of
geometric transitions. And each parameter here in the complex deformation is the holomorphic free form integrated over the A cycle. And there's some dual B cycle for each A cycle. Okay. So all the supersymmetric vacua that this theory has a very rich structure of supersymmetric vacua and the metastable ones that I described. The supersymmetric one can be matched by geometry in the same way that I will describe, but I won't talk about that. Okay. I will just tell you what the metastable, our proposal for the geometric understanding of the metastable vacuum is. So take two of the three cycles and use two of them alone and give them the same size. So you are left with this geometry. This parallel legs, as Sammy was saying, is some A1 singularity. The remaining one is a conifold, but you don't care about it that much. So after a geometric transition, a geometric transition is really what finding the gravity dual is, right? You take the brains and you do replace these D brains wrap over some two cycle for some flux over some three cycle and the dual cycle. So let me come back to, do I have a, okay, here, here. It's just a, what I said is that this one, these brains were n equals 2 type. This is the ISS node. And it's deformation, and this is the deformation that I'm talking about here. Okay? Deformation associated with this N-series. Okay, gives me a flux on the A cycle that is proportional to the number of frames, and some flux, some NS flux on the dual cycle. That is basically, in field theory language, the number of steps in the cascade. Mm? So we still have these brains. As I said, this vacuum appears when this metastable vacuum appears when this theory is in the mesonic branch of this node, these nodes here. So these brains have to be explicitly there, and their positions along this curve of singularities is what gives the depths in the mesonic branch. So far there's no, everything is supersymmetric. How do we get something non-supersymmetric? Well, here is where I want to make the connection with KPB. So non-supersymmetric states of a field theory can be obtained by adding NDV three brains to this vacuum. So how can you add one? Well, and this is not the only thing that you want to do. You really want to keep the charges at infinity fixed. So you are finding really a vacuum of the same gauge theory. This is not what KPB did. They just took something that they understood, which was Kleanov-Strassler, added anti-distal brains, and said, "Okay, this is some vacuum in some Kleanov-Strassler theory with less number of flavors." Okay, since the mechanism for explaining in field theory what they were doing it was not known, you can always do that. And here we are more constrained because we are already explaining field theory what the vacuum is of. So we want to want to keep the number of D3 brains at infinity fixed. So our gravity dual will have basically the number this NC times the number of steps in the cascade unit of D3 brain charge at infinity. So let's say we add an anti-D brain, anti-D3, This is not what we want to do, because this will reduce the number of V3s by one. So we have to add an anti V3-D3 pair. Okay? And this thing's annihilate, so that's you don't gain anything by doing that. So you can repeat the same thing. You can do 2, 3, 4 until nc minus one, and they will annihilate pairs, and they will annihilate. But once you reach nc of them, you have another thing that you can do. A trick that you can play is you can jump fluxes in the following way. You can take the original flux on the V cycle and shift it by one. It's like moving one step in the cascade. So you add nc antibrains, so you subtract one, but you jump by one. Okay, so this is fine. And I will explain why it's nice, because you can already see it here. The nice thing about this is that it matches exactly the field theory analysis, because you don't have vacuum with any arbitrarily low vacuum energy, but the vacuum here has a vacuum energy that is proportional to nc times the some scale before. So that the counting matches exactly. So as I said, the Mesonic branch also contains nc D5 brain probes that have to be there explicitly, and they are nicely sitting in the curve of A1 singularities. These anti-D3 brains, so these D5s are there explicitly, and they attract the D3s, the anti-D3s. So the comparison with the gauge theory is as follows. So it's impossible to get Mirov steady states with energy that goes like 1 to nc minus 1, but the energy of the Susi breaking vacuum is order is nc in units of the dynamical scale, which is exactly what happens in gauge theory. Okay. The metastability, why is this table? This is the only, well, this is one of the things that we would like to understand in more detail. As I said, in KPB, once the number of anti-D brains goes over 8% of the number of M, basically the thing becomes classically unstable. But this is different, because that would be the case if this was the only thing there. But this case, this thing has still the NC brains explicitly there. So for large NC, the three-form fluxes are diluted, and the way they are diluted because NC controls two things: controls the number of D5s. At the same time, because these two numbers are the same, it controls the size of the three cycle at the end of the day. It goes as square root of NC. So you increase NC, you put more brains, and you make the three sphere larger. So at the same time, you are making the brains want to polarize less, and you're attracting them to the D5s that are there more. That's what we think explains why this thing is stable, but we would like to understand it in more detail. So the need to polarize is overcome by the D5 anti D3 attraction. So 5 more minutes. Let's have 5 more minutes. Right. So just to conclude, and this is basically what people have been doing after this, is that there's a very intuitive type 2A T-dual Hanani-Witten picture. And it's very useful, even in these cases, to understand the quantitative features of vacuum. And for orbifolds of the conifold, it looks like this. It has some set of NS and NS and rotated NS brains, and some D4 brains stretching between them. All of them share 3+1 dimensions where the gauge theory is living. Okay, this is the, you have 6 intervals here. This is periodically identified. You have 6 intervals there, which are the 6 nodes of my quiver. You want to look at this occupation number. Let me first look at the case where the meson and the master were equal to 0. It corresponds precisely to this configuration. So you have left 2 segments unoccupied, NC, 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 and 1. This was electric theory. What is the magnetic theory? The dual, well, in brain language, the dual corresponds to go through infinite coupling, moving something in other direction, but this prescription is basically due to Kutasov. So the cyber dual, you take this thing, you move it, it's a cyber dual on the fernal. You get one brain at the end of the day, just because you, when you cross brains, you generate D-force in the opposite direction and annihilate. So what happens when the configuration I want to consider, which is one with this non-zero mass term that can be mimicked in this language by removing the one of the NS brains from the origin, and this is the mesonic web that is non-zero. Here it's an important thing, which is related to the previous question, is that these two these defaults that combine and move when this meson is non-zero are stretching between two parallel NS brains. This is an N equals two configuration by itself, and this is the T dual of the A1 singularity. And okay, now do the cyber duality, and what you see is that just because this is a non-zero, these brains don't align anymore. So the anti-brains are there, if you want. So this is an intermediate picture where the anti-brains are still there. And you have final configuration which has minimum energy, which is combining these two things here, and this is what you get. Okay. So the conclusion is that you have engineered a gauge theory with interesting features using D-brains on some Calabi-Yau singularity, that a weak tough coupling I have explained, where this thing it's has metastable vacua. All the dimensionful parameters are dynamically generated, all these small mass terms and things like that. One of them were generated by this mesonic branch, which is stable, and that one was generated by a string instanton. So everything is clear there. And I haven't proved, but we have proposed that the gravity description for both, in this case, I explained only for the non-supersymmetric one. I gave a proposal about the gravity description is along the lines of KPB. Again, this doesn't need to be true. It shouldn't be, it doesn't need to be true because this is something that is non-supersymmetric. And I don't expect ISS to have a simple gravity dual description, and I don't expect KPB to have a simple field theory description. What we did was compromise. So finding something that is in complexity between the two things. So the field theory is a little more complicated, is this quiver, and the gravity dual is something more complicated, is this orbifold of the conifold. But everything matches qualitatively very nice, and this is what the original expectation, because you really expect these two things to correspond to each other. And our work indicates or gives some indication that at least in some cases, the metastable states constructed using anti-D brains in warp throats are dual to ISS-like states. And stringy, this seems that some string instanton effect play an important role. And more generally speaking, these orbifolds of the conifold are a very simple laboratory to play with ideas. This is what we have done recently. Or more generally, these generalized conifolds or LABA geometries. For example, here in this context, the appearance of this string instanton superpotential term was also explained as a gauge theory instanton coming from higher in the duality cascade. Also, you heard last week, they are flexible enough to allow for modes of supersymmetry breaking without non-abelian gauge symmetry. So what are the further directions? Well, one is embedding this in a compactification. Much of the things that I tuned today will become dynamical. Well, of course, understanding the gravity dual in more detail. And on general grounds, is can we find metastability in gravity duals of simpler field theories, like some field theory that is a pure SUN plus some flavors plus some type of interaction. And if we can do that, since I said that they don't have to, there's no need, can they suggest other mechanisms of why supersymmetry is broken or metastable state that exists in other regimes, like out of the infrared, the magnetic free range? So I think this is another interesting direction and it's working though.
Was one of the key points of the construction to have sort of a quiver that was non-chiral, so that you could.
Wait. I think it's enough.
We didn't want to use things that we didn't know to map how to map to KPB. Okay, we could have put, I could have engineered ISS by putting these membranes giving rise to massive flavors from the start. Okay, that's why I don't know. So then I wanted to generate masses with DeFi rates. Okay, so that's where I needed this piece here, which was basically our original work. Our first work was, you can see that you can always add this piece, and with this d10 different from zero, you generate masses from four ISS. So that's so we're already constrained not to use 7 bits, for example. So this type of thing, I think that it's very non-chiral, and that's a required ingredient here. Of course, you can think about some mechanism that is similar to this, but it's in some other quiver, I don't think it's easy to work out. But this is like a simplest thing. I don't know any other example that is like that. And I can do this job. Okay. At the same time, it's very easy to see why this, in top of an orientable plane, give masses to these other two peaks, which is also a necessary condition. And something I didn't explain is why I split this NC+1 flavors in two sets instead of having one only set. And the reason is that this determinant here, which seems like as long as you can assure that this is non-zero, gives you masses for whatever you want, so why don't you put NC+1 here, NC+1 or any number? The problem is that this is a determinant of, let's say, an NF by NF matrix, okay? In this case, imagine it would be an NC+1, NC+1. So this is a constraint. But the other problem is that the energy, the vacuum energy in ISS is proportional to just NC of them, okay? So the system would like to relax to put in NC of the eigenvalues to zero and throw in these other ones to some other one to infinity, for example, if you would like to give more masses to more things. So that's why we split this NC and the instanton one. I don't know. And these are simple. I mean, these quivers are simple enough that they can give you anything you want. It's sufficient.
Then let's thank the speaker again.